Okay. Welcome everybody to Health Science System Committee meeting. Could we have a roll call, please, Winter?
Chair Dubrava?
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Boylan? Regent Boylan? Okay. Regent Brooks? Regent Moran?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Regent Tarkanian?
Present.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. Just two quick housekeeping items. I want to give a shout out to Vice Chair Carvalho and Chief General Counsel Reynolds. Since I'm not in the room, please don't hesitate to get my attention or interrupt depending on what's happening with our speakers or what's developing in the room. I appreciate that. The second item I wanted to mention, going to change the order just a little bit here. I want to give a heads up to the speakers. We are going to hear from UNLV Medicine, then go directly to UNLV School of Dental Medicine, and then we'll finish those school reports with UNR. So I went out of order just a little bit. With that being said, we'll go to item one, public comment. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
There is none in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment in Elko?
There is none in Elko.
Thank you. Winter, do we have any submitted public comment for here?
No submitted public comment.
And do we have any people in attendance that want to give public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
Thank you. We will go to item two, the minutes. Do I have a motion?
Carvalho will move.
I have a motion to approve the minutes. Do I have a second? I think I see Regent Boylan with a second for that. Any discussion regarding the minutes? All those in favor of passing, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. We will come back to chair's report, so we'll go to item four, the UNLV Kirkcaccorian School of Medicine report. We will start with Dean Mark Kahn. Dean Kahn, please.
Ah, works better when you turn it on. Thank you. For the record, Mark Kahn, Dean Kirkcaccorian School of Medicine and Vice President for Health Affairs. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Regents. If I could have the next slide, please. So at UNLV, one of the biggest efforts that we've been doing over the past 9 or 10 months is really formulating a strategic plan for the Academic Health Center. So the Academic Health Center is our 5 health science schools plus representatives of mental and behavioral health. We've been going through a very deliberative strategic planning process, and what's important is that this entity is going to allow us to better serve our community and really meet the 4 pillars of what we're here to do, that is to educate, to provide care, to do research, and to serve our community. And it's been really fun and engaging to have this group of people really work together to formulate what I think will be very important to our university and community. From an academic affairs perspective, as we've mentioned probably before, we have our MD-MBA combined program approved. Our MD-MPH program is soon to be approved. I have personal interest in these programs. I think that they train the physicians of the future. We need future physicians who have expertise in both public health and business to really help with the healthcare sector. We also are putting together a Master's of Medical Science program for people interested in health sciences that may not quite have the credentials necessary when they graduate college to go to medical school. We had over 2,000 applications this past year. As you can see, we have solid GPAs and MCATs. Nearly all of our students are Nevada residents, and every student has a connection to Nevada. We have 29 economically disadvantaged students and 22 first-generation college students. We're really proud of that. That's really our mission. Our mission is to have a medical school class that mirrors our community so they can best care for our community. And I'm proud to report that our licensing examination performance has been 100%. So we're getting good students. We're getting folks that are first-generation college students, and we're really we're really making them physicians, which is really important. From a graduate medical education, those who are our residents and fellows, they've been actively involved into the second Delta wave of COVID. We're also working to improve the diversity of our graduate medical education programs because, again, we want to train people that mirror our community. We've welcomed 115 new residents and fellows to our programs. We have leadership development programs in faculty affairs, and we are actually putting together short courses for leadership for our faculty. Research, that's been updated. We've received about $4 million through governmental sources. We are now expanding our clinical trials as COVID is getting a little bit behind us. We're able to open clinical trials, and we have submitted, this data is out of date, but we have submitted through ARPA funding and others awards to the tune of about $70 million. Now, we're not going to get $70 million in funding, but if you don't apply, you don't get. And some of these things that we've asked for are things that will directly serve our community, a traffic safety program, vans so that we can get into the community to provide care, to bring care to people rather than to bring people to care. And that's really fundamentally important as we move forward, I think, for our community. We've been actively involved in diversity, equity, and inclusion. We have an office. We've been reaching out to high school students and younger. The university has engaged a program with Clark County School District, which is an after-school program in two elementary schools. That's really piloted by the School of Education and Dean Danica Hayes, but we are participating in that, as are the other health science schools. Again, we want students in the Valley to consider careers in health science. It's a good pathway. These are good-paying jobs. If they become physicians, that's fine, but that's not the goal. The goal is really careers in health science. We also, this year, started a freshman reading project for the School of Medicine. I was pretty passionate about that. And our students read Fatal Invention. If you haven't read it, you should. It's an interesting treatise on the role of racism in America. And I thought that was a great way to really start talking about the social issues in healthcare and the social determinants. And that was really well received by our first-year students. This is going to be an annual event with a different book each year. We raised this year $3.4 million. We've also recently secured an additional $2.7 million to hire some rheumatologists, and we expect that this year's fundraising will actually double that goal. So we've been actively involved in getting funding, really philanthropic support for our various missions. Now I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, our Vice Dean for Clinical Affairs and Strategy, to talk about finance. He's going to talk about UNLV Health. We realize UNLV Medicine is confusing, but also health is much more than medicine. And changing the name of the practice to UNLV Health is going to allow us to better realize the mission and goals of the Academic Health Center. Dr. Gardner?
Good morning, Chair DeBrava, Regents, Chancellor Rose. Yes, so first I want to talk to you, Michael Gardner, for the record, Vice Dean, Clinical Affairs and Strategy, Kirkorian School of Medicine. We want to talk, and CEO and President of what is now we're doing business is UNLV Health. And you can see our new logo. As far as, I want to thank Council Reynolds and other folk looked at this. We just did a DBA, so it was made it easy to go through these changes. We want to talk about more than just providing health, you know, just direct medical care, but also look at what we do in public health. Certainly that's been a big focus for us. Also, we hope to expand and work with our colleagues in the nursing school, in Allied Health School, now the School of Integrative Health, as well as our friends in the dental school, and work collaboratively beyond just the area of direct medicine. We want to give you an update of what we did last year. And, of course, there was a virus that was going around, you may have heard. So we gave 128,000 COVID doses, COVID vaccine doses in two locations, principally at our UNLV main campus. Again, I want to thank President Whitfield and Juanita Fain and Adam Garcia and his great crew and all the people that made that really a very successful effort. We got a lot of positive feedback. I recognize some of you were actually got to be customers, for lack of a better word, at our site, and hopefully you found the process efficient and working well. We also had a campus site at CSN Henderson. President Zaragoza, your folk were just really wonderful and very helpful, and we really greatly appreciate it. We did transition the Ackerman Center. Is now not technically under UNLV. The Grant to Give Foundation wanted to take over management. We still provide all the clinical care. We did not leave the children that are on the spectrum in the lurch. We still are taking care of them. Again, it's the only place in town that provides care for kids with autism and other spectrum disorders that have Medicaid. And obviously, that's a huge population. We have implemented employee culture surveys. In fact, actually, we have a plan that we'll be rolling out to respond to some of those, as well as our patient satisfaction surveys. We had over 20 physicians that earned, I was reminded yesterday that my very first meeting was in this room in March of 2018, and some of you, Regent Carter, you may remember that, Regent McAdoo, I think Regent DiCarlo, I think y'all were all here. And at that time, I was told that perhaps we needed to have physicians that were performing at a higher level. I'm happy to tell you that we had over 20 physicians that we gave it was a small amount, it wasn't a huge amount of money, but a little bit of money to point out that they were earning above the 70th percentile, let me repeat, the 70th percentile nationally as far as productivity for their specialty. We have a few people that are below the 30th percentile, but for every one of those, we have 2.5 physicians that are above the 70th. So I just want to say that our docs are working hard, our docs are doing great things, and it's greatly appreciated. We consolidate our two otorhinolaryngology, which is a fancy way of saying ear, nose, and throat clinics, into one clinic on our Spring Valley location. It's really a gorgeous clinic, and it makes it easier for patients to get in. And we're in the process of instituting MyChart. For any of you who have been involved either with UMC or any other institution across the country that uses Epic, MyChart it's a phone app. You can ask for refills. You can send an email to your physician. We can send out text messages for reminders for things like COVID vaccines, for example. We're going to be moving towards scheduling to allow people to schedule. That's going to be in the next year. One of the concerns that we have is our call center, our contact center, and one way of helping we have some really terrific people who work very hard in our contact center. One way to help them is decrease the volume of calls that are coming in by letting people do a lot of stuff just online. This is when we turned it in May, we have an unaudited. In December, of course, we'll have our audit and we'll give you the final numbers. But we finished a year roughly around $18 million in the black. Now, while I'm obviously very happy to tell you that, let me give you two caveats. As far as just pure clinical work and as far as operations, we finished right around $3 million, depending on what the audit for right about $3 million in the black. We received full forgiveness of our $4.1 million PPP loan. We got that. That was actually, we got the letter in July, but because it was dated in June, it actually booked in this past year. So that's $4.4 million that came off. And then, again, I want to thank President Whitfield, Gene Vach, and Chair DeBrava for supporting this, of removing the, forgiving the original loan with the medical school. Again, many of you were here. as you've heard me say before, we started it with $7 million in a credit card, so because the loan to pay for salaries when we first started. And President Whitfield and Jean, and again, I know that Regent DeBrava, Chair DeBrava, was involved in this. It's greatly appreciated. Obviously, it's appreciated from a financial point of view, but I think just as importantly, it sent a strong message to the physician faculty that their work has been appreciated, particularly in the time of COVID. So thank you for that. Again, with the recent surge, I have to say that our pulmonology faculty have been leading the care at UMC. If you've been in the ICU with COVID, it was a UNLV doc that took care of you throughout this entire pandemic. I have to brag that the mortality rate in our UMC ICU that's run by our doctors, our fellows, our residents, is a third lower than the national average. I think that just testifies to their great care. We do have a budgeted loss coming forward, and that's particularly because we have two departments that we have issues with, pediatrics and ear, nose, and throat, and we're working on that. But our biggest challenge, frankly, going forward is, as you've heard me say before, is the uncompensated care. We're looking at even that increasing to $7.7 million, and the lion's share of that is, of course, at UMC, roughly around 80%. But that number is actually higher because our clinics, probably the next biggest places in our clinics, and many of the people that we're seeing in our clinics that are uncompensated is follow-up for care we provide at UMC. Obviously, if we do a surgery, if I do a delivery, those kinds of things, we're going to see those patients follow up because, well, first off, legally we have to, but more importantly, morally and ethically, it's our requirement to take care of our patients after we've provided care. So this is probably the biggest challenge facing UNLV Health going forward. And there's been conversations. Hope springs eternal. I hope we can figure out an answer to this. It's been slow. And I'm not going to go over all the lines on this, but we did really well last year, and we're very pleased with not only obviously about the PPP and about the loan forgiveness, but also what we just did operationally. And again, this shows the bad debt and what we're looking at, and again, estimating around $7.6 million. With the uncompensated care. And for us, if you think about it, many of you do businesses yourself. When we look at the fact that we collect around 40 some odd million a year, the idea that a business is going to write off almost 20%, that's not a sustainable model for long term. I want to thank you for the support that you've given us this year, through COVID, through all the things with the vaccination. Again, President Whitfield and his team has been terrific, and we look forward to a good year and hopefully a year where we can all get rid of these things. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Gardner, and thank you, Dr. Kahn, for your presentation. Do I have any questions for either one of the gentlemen?
Chair DeBrava, yes. This is Regent Carvalho. I do have a few questions, if possible. Thank you.
Please.
First, Dr. Gardner, regarding the uncompensated care at UMC, is this this includes that mission support that hasn't been given to UNLV in the past few years from the federal government through UMC? Is that correct?
Correct. For any number of years, about just over $3 million was given to first UNR and then to the first year of UNLV. For reasons that we don't need to relitigate, that was cut beginning in July of 2018. If you think about, now, one of the weird things about healthcare is that $7 million is gross charges. And because if you're uncompensated, if you're self-pay, we charge you full pay. That's what we're required to do by our auditors and such. So that leaves that $7 million hit. If we were taking Medicaid, and we'd be fine with Medicaid rates, that ironically works out to around $3 million. So if we were getting paid Medicaid rates, which is the lowest insurance in town, but we do a lot of Medicaid, that's our mission to take care of people who are underserved, that would be around that $3 million figure. And with that, frankly, we would be close if not above break even at the Medicaid rate.
So we don't accept Medicaid at this time?
Oh, of course, no, of course we accept Medicaid. Okay. But these are people, for whatever reason, that they don't qualify for Medicaid.
Okay,
either A, they're undocumented. B, as you know, we love living here, but there's a lot of transient folk, and you can't get Medicaid unless you've been a Nevada resident for at least 30 days. So if you're visiting and you have some kind of untoward event, which happens not infrequently, about a mile mile west of here, you go to UMC, and then we wind up taking care of you, particularly in trauma. But even in my specialty, people will fly in and have obstetrical problems and be admitted, and then we're eating that cost.
Thank you for that clarification, and I hope that we can work towards getting that uncompensated care compensated. And for Dean Kahn, I do have just a clarification for everyone's edification on here. On page 4, your admissions report, the total class coming in is 60 students, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I just, 55 out of 60 that have Nevada connections is wonderful, and I'm glad to hear that. The other thing I have is a question regarding the Masters of Science in Medical Science on page 3. I'm curious to know from a workforce lens, what kind of career prospects does somebody who has that degree, what can they look forward to in a career?
Thank you, Regent. So let me clarify, these are programs that are not currently approved. They would have to come to this body for approval, but they're programs we're working on. We recognize that there are a number of people who have aspirations to be physicians, but because of personal circumstance, because of experience, because of family situations, financial situations, et cetera, they may just not quite have the grades that make us comfortable accepting them into medical school. These programs are designed, and this program is designed, to take those students as an enrichment program, if you will, to make them more competitive for health sciences. I say medicine, but that could include dental medicine or other health science fields. So the purpose of the degree is really to enrich an applicant for a career in health science. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair DiBrava.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho. And I just wanted to also add some comments regarding that uncompensated care. You know, hopefully our partners on the Clark County Commission and Hospital Advisory Board are paying attention and listening to this. This is it's a big deal. It has to be worked on, and hopefully it will. And I also want to make a comment about philanthropy. It's encouraging to see what's happening. It's just going to take more time, and the word will get out, and I think that will continue to grow. And I think that's it, gentlemen. Thank you very much for the presentation. Oh, one last. I was going to thank the administration also for helping with that $13 million working capital forgiveness, or for them to work on that financially. That's a big help to the faculty practice plan. So thank you for your presentation.
Chair DiBrava, Regent Perkins, if you don't mind, I just have a quick question.
Please.
Thank you, sir. I was just wondering about, you mentioned the elementary school program. Can you give a few more sentences about that?
Certainly. Several of the schools at the university reached out to Clark County to see if we could help with enrichment programs for healthcare. Two schools were chosen, Wasden Elementary and Rex Bell. And again, we're working on after-school programming for science, for STEM, for STEAM. Again, this is a collaboration really led by the School of Education and their Dean Danica Hayes, but dental medicine, nursing, and the School of Medicine are three of the other schools involved.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. Seeing no other questions or comments, we will move to item 6, UNLV School of Dental Medicine report.
Mr. Chairman.
Dean Garcia. Is that Regent Moran?
Yes, thank you. I just had a couple of comments. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead, please.
Sure my comments and at the apropos time. I have two comments, two observations, and I have just a quick question for Dr. Gardner and obviously Dean Kahn. Observations. I had an opportunity to meet with our supporting medical school, powered by UNLV, as I see it. Can you hear me okay, Mr. Chair?
Regent Moran, if you could maybe go a little closer to your microphone.
Okay, my apologies. Let me see if I can't get a better action. And if everybody else could mute their microphone, I'll help a little bit as well. Just a couple of thoughts that I have, Mr. Chairman, as well as observations and just a couple of questions for Dr. Gardner and then also for Dean Kahn. First, I had an opportunity 30 days ago. I wanted to report to the committee that I had a chance to meet with the folks that are pushing the medical school UNLV forward. And I had not spoken with them in several months, summer period, but getting back and hearing an overview of the current trajectory of the medical school and having toured the property and seeing, the build out, it's really incredible what they're doing. And there are so many moving to the build out of something of that magnitude. And I wanted to, in case any of the regions have not had an opportunity to go review inspections, site inspection, I would highly
This is a regent. Regent.
The cross.
Regent Moran. This is Joe Reynolds. I'm so sorry to interrupt. We're having trouble with the audio, and your voice is fading in and out. It sounds like there's some type of technical difficulty, and so I apologize for interrupting, but wanted to inform you of that.
Thank you, General Counsel Reynolds. And if I could just remind everyone else to mute their microphones, that might lend a little improvement to Regent Moran's audio. Try to continue, Regent Moran.
No, and my apologies. If it remains at this at this pace, definitely I can reserve comments and follow up with the memo. But let me know, because I don't want to disrupt and slow down your meeting, Mr. Chairman. But getting back to the invitation that's available for all board membership to go and take a look at the current stages of construction and to see the build out is really pretty unbelievable, and to think that we're doing this here in Nevada, in Southern Nevada, after all of these years is really quite amazing, and it goes to show. The level of care, the level of importance and priority that medical care in general is to our community, and to have a medical school in the South along with a prestigious medical school in the North is, in my opinion, fabulous. So I wanted to provide that as a quick little update and observation. The second item, I was very, very pleased to see in the reports and essentially what Dr. Gardner, who is just an incredible asset to the school, along with obviously Dean Kahn and their administrative and C-level staff. But I will say that it's very, very comfortable to hear the positive measures, the proactive measures that are being taken with regards to COVID, and I've seen that, and I wanted to let both Dr. Gardner and Dean Kahn know that does not go unnoticed, and I know that they are in the trenches every day, and thanking them and everybody that falls and reports below them. Thank you for your service. The last item, and I'll wrap up, Mr. Chairman, with regards to UNLV, I wanted to ask Dr. Gardner a quick question with regards to the clinical aspect as opposed to the early habit side of it. I'm trying to understand really quickly, and I don't want to spend longer than a minute, Dr. Gardner, so if this is something that can't be answered in less than a minute or 2 minutes, then we can have a sidebar on it. But I'm trying to understand who is supervising fellows, those doing rounds in UMC and some of the other hospital emergency facilities, medical facilities that we currently have our students training at. Can you just not really elaborate on it, but how does that supervision work with regards to, you know, the folks that we are putting into the medical practice, you know, higher education and continued education, medical education? How does that look at the top of the food chain with regards to physicians that are overseeing and supervising the roles and responsibilities of our fellows and our students that are doing rounds or shadowing or just observing?
Thank you. First off, thank you, Regent Moran, for your kind comments, and much appreciated. As far as the supervision of our students, residents, and fellows, and to remind everyone, we have medical students, we have residents that are training in specialties, and then fellows are people who are training in subspecialties. For example, Dean Kahn did a fellowship in HEMOC. I did a fellowship in maternal fetal medicine after we did our residencies in internal medicine and OB-GYN. We have over 300 plus residents and fellows. We have 20 programs evenly split between residencies and fellowships. I think some people are surprised to hear we have that many subspecialty fellowships. As far as the supervision, the vast majority of the supervision is done by our own faculty, our full-time faculty, and that can be at UM, principally, well, obviously in our clinics, it's our faculty, principally at UMC, but we also have faculty that are doing supervision, particularly in OB-GYN and Sunrise. And we have also faculty doing other cases in surgical cases in other hospitals and even surgery centers supervising. We do also, since we are a community, I wouldn't say based, but community inclusive school of medicine, we have faculty who are not employees, paid employees of UNLV, but are community faculty. We have family medicine docs, for example, at Intermountain Health, who our students spend time with. Many of our cardiology faculty are not full-time or part-time or community faculty. That's true also for gastroenterology. That's true in OB-GYN for repro endocrinology because we don't offer that. So it's a mixture, Regent Miranda. We have faculty who are all board-certified or board-eligible physicians supervising fellows, residents, and students. So, but the most important thing for the community to understand is that whether or not they're full-time UNLV faculty members, which is the majority of the case, they're all board-certified or board-eligible licensed Nevada physicians, so that our students and our residents and fellows are receiving the appropriate amount of supervision. Now, as you grow up, you can imagine that you have to spend a little less time supervising a fellow than perhaps you do a medical student, unless you're teaching them a procedure, right? Because these fellows have been out of medical school for 3 to 5 to 6 years. But that the appropriate amount of supervision is there, and we couldn't do that without our community partners that help us do that. So that I hope that's a brief graduate medical education treatise.
I really, again, through the chair, Mr. Chair, thank you for giving me a little bit of time to address Dr. Gardner and Dean Kahn. And, you know, one other point, and thank you. You did answer my question, and I appreciate it. I applaud everything that you all are doing, and the fact that your jobs have been made so much more, or your mission has been made so much more complicated because of the current landscape that we are faced. The other quick point, again, less than 10 seconds, Mr. Chair, is I also wanted to make sure to mention the collaboration between both of our schools of medicine over the course of the last 12 months to a year, at least with me paying very, very close attention both north and south. And I think that that has inured to the benefit of not only our students, but the community in general and the state in general. So I appreciate that, and I would encourage your continued good faith efforts, Dr. Gardner and Dean Kahn, with Dean Schwenk and the folks up north, and whomever ends up being Dean Schwenk's replacement, who I think is going to have some very, very large shoes to fill, because he has been an incredible asset up in the north to that school. But thank you very much, and Mr. Chairman, thank you again for the...
Thank you, Regent Moran, and thank you again, team from the Kirk Coyne School of Medicine at UNLV. We will move to item six. Dean Garcia, please.
Carvalho, thank you. Good morning, and Regents present. A few updates. I haven't been before you, I believe, since March, so wanted to say we've had a lot of activities. One of the interesting one was conducting our graduation following all the guidelines in our state at Las Vegas Ballpark. So I'd like to thank President Whitfield for standing with me on third base as we shook our graduates walking past us and partially in the sun, so he endured with great pride. So we appreciate that. And since then, some of you Regents have taken us up on our offer to visit, and we're exceptionally pleased to have had Regent McAdoo and Regent Del Carlo. So we were very proud to show the activities of ongoing. A lot of people who visit don't understand it's a major outpatient clinic facility, and there's a lot of action going on. And with that, mentioning the clinic activity, I'm proud to say we're having a healthy rebound of our patients coming back in a safe environment. And I can attest that we have had no origination of the virus from our clinical contacts. So we're very proud of our safety measures, and our faculty are working hard to supervise directly our students providing the care. We did offer the students virtual white coats. It just doesn't have the same look and feel, and we took their opinion and delayed them. And with that, we recently conducted a white coat ceremony in July, and thank you to those who attended. And we were at Ham Hall, and it was safely managed. Many of them, the parents were just so thankful that we postponed, even though it's meant to have meaning with timing, but they were just excited that we still had it, and we're going to have an additional one because we're catching up because of the pandemic in September. So if you can, we'd appreciate your attendance, but we realize you're very busy people, so we appreciate that. The other thing that's coming along is our 20-year anniversary will be next year. So this school was founded in 2002, and actually Senator Rawson, who is one of our senior faculty, works in our clinics. So he's, I know, what was part of the impetus for getting this started. So we will be looking to put together some celebrations and recognition, and Mr. Vince Albertas will be working with us with communications from UNLV. So our rebounding on the clinics, I just wanted to mention, are up about 30% from 2020, which is exciting because our students train by providing care. It's an essential element of becoming a licensed dentist. And just because somebody mentioned Medicaid, 80% of our patients are Medicaid. So I always keep my chief financial officer, who's seated in the back, near me to make sure we're keeping tabs on everything that's going on, because a lot of our budget comes from our clinical care. I wanted to thank Provost Heavey and the President Whitfield, along with the other deans from the health sciences. I want to echo what Dean Kahn said. We've been working really hard, and I'm very pleased to work with some colleagues that all have a shared vision, and I think you'll see the results of that as we're working through our strategic planning process on how an academic health center comes along. This is one of the key recruiting points to come to Las Vegas, to come to Nevada, is the nascent health center, and this is a major impetus and will be economic development as well as workforce development. I echo some of Dean Kahn's comments because he said we were involved, so you don't need to hear that again, but my brothers in medicine are keeping us in the loop, and so that's good, and we're actively involved. What I wanted to mention to you is we've been into a strong recruitment effort, and we're bringing some amazing people on faculty, from a pathologist to radiologist to general dentist. In particular, I wanted to mention one who will be special and will be highlighted as we move forward. She's a double alumna of UNLV. at UNLV. She was a Division I volleyball player. And as you might guess, as you see my height relative to the microphone, she's a little bit has a little bit more strength and height than I do. And then she's a dental school graduate, and she went out and did her training across the country, the most recently at Oklahoma. She's a board-certified oral maxillofacial surgeon. And so she brings a great representation. So we're now at the age that we can now bring back some of our residents, some of our graduates, both from both portions of our university, which is very exciting for us. And her name is Dr. Blair Thomas, so you'll be hearing more about her. The other thing I would like to tell you is we're working on, our students are experiencing a major change in national board examinations, and they're now forced into what's called an integrated national board. And early results, although somewhat anecdotal at this point, we're getting 100% pass rate. So we're very excited about that. So it's kind of a reaffirmation of that we're doing what we need to do to educate our students. In the area of research, as Dean Kahn mentioned, over the past year or so, we put in over $4.3 million in grant submissions and have had over $650,000 in actual funding. It's a very competitive process. We're steering our biomedical science faculty and our research endeavors to be in alignment with a top-tier institution and in an academic health center. Of special note, as you may have seen, is Dr. Jeff Eversall working with the College of Engineering, having the first dental study in zero gravity. So they worked with the National Laboratory of International Space Station, NASA, and Colgate-Palmolive in collaboration with our engineers. So they just received those samples back through the SpaceX Dragon spacecraft, and they're testing growth of human oral bacteria in microgravity. So he's one of the first in the nation, and it came out of here, UNLV. We're very proud. As far as other activities, we're just preparing for our anniversary, but I want to tell you right now there's a lot of discussion on dental health care benefits to be included in Medicare, and there's a lot of discussion on that and their politics. We take care of a Medicaid population, so we take the lowest fees, but we manage well. But what's more important, are we training our next practitioners to be having the heart and business acumen to incorporate those patients within their practice? And evidence has shown if you expose these students at an early age and show them how to manage it, they will incorporate that into their practice. So one of such event is on September 25th, Dr. David Capelli, our Associate Dean for Community Engagement, conducts a poverty simulation, and it'll be on the UNLV campus. So it helps our individuals understand those in our community who may lack access to care, have no access to care, and we are many times the safety net for those individuals. So thank you. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Dean Garcia. Do we have any questions?
Chair DuBrava, this is Regent Carvalho. I just have a quick comment. Thank you. Dean Garcia, I recall in the past I had a tenant who was part of the first class of dentists, and when you said 20 years, I couldn't believe that so much time has gone by. So I just want to say congratulations to you and the School of Dental Medicine at UNLV. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks again, Dean Garcia.
Thank you.
We will go to item number 5, UNR School of Medicine report. And Dr. Schwenk and Dr. Piasecki, if you're both online, who would like to go first and kind of maybe do some introductions to tell us what title each has currently?
Mr. Chair, Tom Schwenk, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Dean Emeritus, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine, Mr. Chair, members of the Health Sciences Committee. I have no standing at this point, but I ask President Sandoval for permission to attend briefly for the purpose that you just described to introduce Dr. Piasecki. But first, let me just make a brief comment of thanks to the Health Sciences Committee. We have a long history together. It's been a very intense 10 years, I think it's fair to say. some very complicated issues, some very fraught discussions at times. We did not always agree, but we got the job done. And I think public medical education is much the better for that work. I think it serves the state much differently and much better than it did 10 years ago. And I simply wanted to thank the Health Sciences Committee for this long working relationship. I'll have some further comments for the full board later this morning when we talk about the Renown update. But I did want to say that specifically to the Health Sciences Committee. So thank you for that, Mr. Chair. And then I'll introduce Dr. Piasecki. So Melissa Piasecki is our acting dean for the coming many months as the search process takes place. Dr. Piasecki served as our executive associate dean, our vice dean, and was engaged in all things UNR Med, particularly the implementation of the Renown Agreement. And that, of course, is occupying a tremendous amount of her energy at the moment. She is a professor of psychiatry, a distinguished professor of psychiatry, a forensic psychiatrist who actually has a national reputation in forensic psychiatry and consults widely in very complex legal matters. She also has a very strong background in academic affairs as well as in issues related to the well-being of our faculty and staff members and our students and residents, and you'll hear a bit about that perhaps. One of the reasons that I am very comfortable with this transition, in fact, I would say the major reason why I'm very comfortable with this transition is because of Dr. Piasecki's tremendous background and her expertise, and I think the school is extremely well served, and her relationship and the support of President Sandoval will serve the school extremely well as we make this important transition. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll introduce Dr. Piasecki.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk. And before Dr. Piasecki, we just want to make sure Dean Schwenk is still present for questions or comments at the end of the presentation.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Dr. Piasecki, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Madam Vice Chair and all the members of the committee. Melissa Piasecki, Acting Dean, University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. I'd like to start off by thanking Dr. Schwenk for that very kind introduction and looking forward to working with the committee in the months ahead. I'd like to provide a brief overview of UNR Med with regards to students, some research updates, and then just briefly touch on some of our clinical mission areas, saving much for our main board agenda item later this morning with regards to the Renown affiliation. Starting off with our students, we are very pleased to welcome the class of 2025. They came in early August, and we had a delightful white coat ceremony with them in a very large venue, which worked out extremely well. Our class composition reflects the hard work of our admissions committee. They received over 1,600 applicants and through a very careful and thoughtful process, identified a class of 20 students, a class of 70 students. I'm sure that gave some folks pause. Sorry about that. 70 students and slightly more women than men. Of those students, 93% are Nevada residents. And what I love about this class is that it continues the trend of us diversifying our medical school classes. This is the most diverse class that we've ever had in terms of groups and backgrounds. 67% represent groups or backgrounds underrepresented in medicine. I'd like to highlight some really cool things that our admissions committee is doing and our recruitment team. We have in October a new initiative called See It to Be It. This was inspired by the Black Men in White Coats initiatives. And the See It to Be It program is going to begin in October, where we bring in students who are interested in medicine to meet with faculty and residents who represent different backgrounds. And this is a program that is supported by a gift from Anthem Health. So we're looking forward to starting some new programs as well as many other current partnerships and pipelines into medical school. I'd like to say a few things about how COVID is currently impacting our medical education world. Our students see COVID as an opportunity for service. As you know, our students were active in administering vaccines when Dr. Hug English was working through vaccine administration here in Northern Nevada. Our students are now testing for COVID again with the new wave. We have student volunteers working, doing shifts of testing to help everyone get the testing that they need. Our students have also been active in rural Nevada and staffed an Elko County hotline supporting the population with questions and access to resources regarding COVID. And our students are currently running a clinical trial looking at the short and long-term impact of COVID-19 infection on folks who are convalescing, and that's under the supervision of our faculty and renowned faculty at the UNR Med Clinical Research Center. COVID's impacting everyone's stress level, so we are increasing the monitoring and the activities and supports for our students, including our PA students. And we'll continue to monitor closely because we know that COVID has added to everyone's burden. With regards to looking forward to the next match, our students are busy planning their aways and their applications. COVID's limiting the number of away rotation students can do, but every student should be doing at least one. Most interviews for residencies will be virtual, and for our GME programs, we are planning all of our interviews to be virtual. I'd like to say a few words about our physician assistant program. We currently have our third class enrolled, and we're very pleased that we graduated the second class of physician assistant students. Of the 23 grads, 16 of those are now licensed in Nevada. I'm going to move on and say a few updates about our UNR Med research. We have a remodel going on, which is going to increase the basic science space. It's projected to be completed in January 2022. And this new space will expand our biomedical research in neurosciences. Our research grant activity has been at a very high level. In fiscal year 21, we had 156 submitted applications that came in at around $111,500,000 for submitted. Our success rate was high. We had about a 30% success rate. 48 awards totaling just shy of $20 million. And then a few words about our practice plan. Our last year was better than the year before, but it was still down as a result of the COVID stressors. We were also very pleased that our PPP loan was forgiven, and that helped quite a bit with the bottom line for fiscal year 21. Our practice plan continues to experience significant stressors. But we are moving into a new phase with the Renown integration. And so some of the stresses with regards to staffing shortages, we see how we're going to be resolving that in the near future. Our clinical services with Renown will integrate. We see our go live date right around the corner. It's 10-1. We'll be seeing patients 10-4. And the clinics that are integrating are everything except for pediatrics, which is already integrated. We are not integrating, however, student health, our Sanford Center operations, and the state health lab. And I would just like to take a moment and mention the tremendous effort from the teams at UNR Med, Renown Health, University Health, and UNR is making this possible. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your support and look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Dr. Piasecki, for your report and for stepping into this role to help with your leadership for the UNR School of Medicine and UNR Med. And we know that there's going to be a full board presentation about that update on the Renown UNR integration. So we look forward to that. I do have, a few people that would like to make some comments. I have a list going. First, I would ask, is there anyone for specific questions for Dr. Piasecki regarding her report? And if not, I have a list of some people that want to make some comments regarding this is the fact that it's Dean Schwang's last Health Science Committee meeting. So far, that list would start with President Sandoval, Chancellor Rose, Regent Carvalho, Regent Moran, and Regent Geddes. So if there's no specific questions for Dr. Piasecki, I would actually call on President Sandoval. Thank you, Dr. Piasecki.
Regent Bravo.
Yeah, and who is that? President Sandoval, please.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava, Vice Chair Carvalho, members of the committee, members of the board. For the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, Reno. You know, it's a sad day for me. I think so much of Dean Schwenk and what he has done for this university, what he's done for our medical school. But I am excited for him for his next chapter of his journey. You know, I did have the opportunity to speak at our White Coat ceremony where I talked to the students about what we like to call the Wolfpack way. I told them that Dean Schwenk has always been the best kind of doctor, the kind of doctor who listens and cares about his patients. And as you all likely know, Dean Schwenk came all the way from Michigan, and there are scores of family practitioners who will tell you that they do things the way that Tom would have done. And I think that's one of the highest compliments that one could ever receive, that so many people look up to the dean and how he has conducted himself with humanity, hope, and with care. So I, as I said, I'm excited for the dean. He's earned this. He's done so many things in terms of leading the transition of the full medical school campus into Northern Nevada. He was the primary negotiator and architect of the integration with Renown Health that will establish the first fully integrated health system in Nevada. Dean Piasecki talked about the physician's assistance program, but that was done under Dean Schwenk's leadership. He's leaving the medical school in the best place that it's ever been, and I think that's one of the highest compliments that one can receive, and we're excited about building that momentum as we move forward. But certainly, Dean Schwenk was the foundation for all of that. So, Mr. Chairman, I just a few short words. I've had the opportunity to work with the dean not only in this past year in my capacity as president, but in my former public service career, and he has always been a man of dignity, a man of integrity, a man of honor, who we're extremely proud has chosen, you know, to work with our university over the past 10 or so years. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I do appreciate the opportunity to say a few words about the dean. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Sandoval. Chancellor Rose.
Thank you, Chairman DeBrava, Vice Chair Carvalho, members of the Board of Regents. For the record, Melody Rose, Chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education. And I always hate to follow my colleague, President Sandoval, who has spoken so eloquently and genuinely about our colleague, Dean Schwenk. But I would like to add just my congratulations to Dean Schwenk. I too have been the beneficiary of working with this incredible professional over the course of the last year. And, you know, I was happy to review his incredible career and contributions to the field of medicine, both within the state of Nevada and nationally. And, you know, in higher education, when our colleagues can boast over 160 publications, it's a little intimidating. But what I'd like to do is, rather than focus on those bona fides, which are the things that show up on resumes, is really to thank Dean Schwenk for his incredible caring. And President Sandoval has spoken to this as well. But just as a reminder to folks, you know, this is a person who has dedicated his life to family medicine, someone whose research has focused especially most recently on depression and mental health issues of our medical students, as well as physician burnout. And he too has just had an incredible presence through this pandemic in the past year plus, and has brought deep caring, humility, and care through an incredibly difficult time. And finally, I want to acknowledge and thank Dean Schwenk for his commitment to rural Nevada and health in our least populated regions within the state. So oftentimes, I think across the country, those in rural pockets of America are overlooked and their health suffers as a consequence, and we should be deeply indebted to Dean Schwenk for his focus there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And best wishes, Dean Schwenk. I wish you good health, safe travels, and when I come to ski in Park City, I'm going to look you up.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. I have Regent Carvalho, Vice Chair Carvalho, Regent Moran, Regent Geddes, and Regent Del Carlo. So we'll go with Vice Chair Carvalho.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. I shared this with Dean Schwenk, but I'd like to publicly also share it. I want to thank you, Dean Schwenk, for your dedication to UNR Med, to ENCHI, and your compassion and kindness to me. My first event as a regent was at the UNR Med School in a day. It was a wonderful introduction to medical school, and I will never forget my experience that day. I feel your dedication. I mean, I think those of us who read your newsletters and your just the way that you present medicine to those of us who are not in the field, I feel it in my heart, your dedication, your commitment, and your love for medicine and educating the next generation of physicians. And you've been a foundation of UNR Med's growth and success. I hope you can enjoy some time with your family and have some rest and relaxation because you have earned it. Congratulations, and thank you for everything that you have done for UNR, UNR Med, and ENCHI, and for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carvalho. Regent Moran notified me he's comfortable with all the comments that are being stated, so he's giving up his time. I was actually going to go a little out of order. I was going to go Regent Del Carlo, and then I'll finish with Regent Geddes. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. Dean Schwenk, we are really going to miss you. I, too, want to thank you so much for everything you've done for the UNR School of Medicine. I was so pleased to see that the School of Medicine is putting together the tribute for you next week, and we all had an opportunity to submit photos or words, and I just want to publicly capsize my words. But when I think of you, I put on there that I always think of you as always, always professional and always so very well prepared. You set such an incredible tone at the top of your medical school. I was always impressed with every event I went, whether it's a white coat ceremony, the graduation, welcoming new staff, faculty. You had every attention to detail, but that's, you have a staff, but you're over that staff, so that's your total professionalism. It was always wonderful to go up to the School of Medicine, and I do recall the doctor for the day. That's a terrific program, and I had to be pulled away at noon. I still want to go back and finish, but that was great. I want to thank you for the smooth transition when UNLV started their School of Medicine. I was a brand new regent when I came on, and we were in the throes of all that. And I thought your 50th celebration of your School of Medicine, you had like a 1 year, and that's really significant for our state and the state that started so small and grew to have our School of Medicine, and in 50 years that were so well celebrated. And I think your lasting legacy for me is just securing the financial health and future of your School of Medicine by that tremendous renown agreement. It was very complex, and you're right. You acknowledged how challenged some of us were at that. But it's a long contract, 50 years. I think a lot of us struggled with that, but I think we did the right thing there. And I do want to thank you, too, you and your wife, Jane, who was always by your side at so many of these events, just a wonderful partner in life, and the fact that you've endowed a scholarship. And so it just is going to reach into the future. You have earned
a well-deserved retirement. You are going to be really missed. And I agree with the chancellor. I have family in Park City. I have a cousin there. So I hope I see you again. But thank you so much, Dean Schwenk. And all the best on your next great adventure.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. And I just want to open up by saying I don't know why you would take your day off to come and sit with us, but we truly appreciate it. And I'll tell you, you know, Las Vegas was clamoring for a full four-year medical school, and former Chancellor Jim Rogers launched the initiative of how to build it. And then for some reason, you accepted the job to come out here and build it. And we started down the path of one unified with 2 4-year schools that evolved into the 4-year schools. And I think one former regent said we could have been sued for bringing you into that situation for the harassment you took from the regents and politicians around the state. But you did stick to it, and you got it done. And then when we transitioned to UNLV, you were very good in working through that, and you culminated it with a renowned agreement. And I just want to echo what Regent Del Carlo said, is you always came to these meetings prepared. You're always ready to answer any and every question. And when you said it, we all believed it, because you're a man of integrity. And I don't think we would have had the 2 full 4-year schools without your leadership. So I hope after the renowned capping here later today, you go hang out with your grandkids. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Geddes. Seeing no other regent comments, I'm actually going to go to Chair's report. So there's more, Dean Schwenk. So, Winter, we'll go under Chair's report, item number 3. And there was only 2 important items for the chair to contribute, and one is about COVID update, and we're going to hear about that in just a few minutes. The other very important item for me to express publicly some gratitude to Dean Schwenk with his retirement, so I want to make a comment here. He's already received many congratulations and well wishes, and I agree with all the sentiment and statements that have been provided so far. Regent Geddes and I are probably the 2 longest serving regents that have kind of witnessed the entire time that Dean Emeritus Schwenk has served the state of Nevada and at UNR. And I just wanted to say it's a privilege serving and working with Dean Schwenk over the last 10 years. And to be a dean of a medical school for 10 years is quite the accomplishment in itself. I just want to publicly say on behalf of the Health Sciences Committee and from me personally, thank you for your dedication and hard work to improve healthcare and medical education in Nevada. It was not just UNR Med, but it was all corners of the state of Nevada that benefited from your wisdom, leadership, and professionalism. So, Dr. Schwenk, Dr. Thomas Schwenk, thank you very much for what you've done and your contributions. And you described the 10 years as at times intense, and I know you and I didn't see eye to eye at all times, but I think we both understood what we were trying to accomplish, and I think we both, in our way, achieved that as far as with the strength and the momentum that UNR Med has now, and that they have a sister institution, a UNLV School of Medicine. But again, you were always, like everyone else has said, you were always prepared, you were always professional, and a man of integrity. So thank you, and I personally wish you happiness in your retirement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This doesn't happen very often, but I'm speechless. And I thank all of you for the generosity. This is really quite overwhelming, and I'm still processing, and we'll have to think upon this a bit. But I do thank you all for the comments. The comments were very personal and mean a great deal to me. And I'll just finish by saying that it sounds like we need to prepare a guest room, because there appears to be a procession of visitors coming to Park City, which I look forward to. So we will enjoy that. And I'll have a few more comments perhaps later this morning at the full board meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Schwenk. With that, we're going to move to item 7, NCHI COVID-19 guidance overview and information update. We will first start with Task Force Co-Chair Joe Reynolds, who's Chief General Counsel, and co-chair Caleb Cage, Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development and Chief Innovation Officer.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava, Joe Reynolds, Chief General Counsel, for the record. I was going to run through for the board and for anyone who is listening, three things. One is to give a timeline overview, to just set a baseline of where we've been, to help inform where we may be going. Also give a by the numbers update on current statistics that we have regarding COVID-19, and then also a state of play. And then I will defer to my co-chair on the COVID task force, Mr. Cage, if he has anything to add. And then also in the audience today, we have Dr. Cheryl Hug English, who is the UNR Student Health Director, who has been an amazing source of information and advice for the COVID task force, as well as Southern Command Director Adam Garcia, who has been also on the task force, working tirelessly on logistics matters, vaccinations. Dean Donnelly is on the agenda, but she is not with us today due to a family matter. And with that, I'll go ahead and begin. And I have a lot of information that I was going to share. And please let me know, Chair DeBrava, if I'm running long on anything. And so I'll begin again where back in March of 2020. And since that time, there have been 50 emergency directives issued by Governor Sisolak. And in March 2020, INCHI, as an entire system, transitioned to remote instruction for all 8 of our institutions, and also to remote work for a vast number of our employees, except for our university police services, our healthcare professionals who were working in the trenches on the COVID-19 pandemic. And that we did so in a matter of 3 weeks. And to put that a little bit in perspective, we have approximately 97,927 students, and we have approximately 17,164 employees. And, you know, that's double the size of Carson City, our state's capital. And in February of 2020, we didn't anticipate ever having to do that. And so that was a remarkable feat by our faculty and our students. As we did that, there was emergency implementation measures initiated by the Board of Regents. We moved courses online. We requested that our dorm students go back to their primary residences. Other than those that had a hardship, we moved to SU grading options for students. We enacted broad deferral programs for student fees and payments. We allowed greater extension of the faculty tenure process, and we imposed a hiring freeze due to budget concerns. As we moved later on into March 2020, we remained in a state of remote instruction and a state of remote learning. Since March 2020, this board has had 76 board meetings and subcommittee meetings. We've had 3 new presidents, a new chancellor, an interim new chief of staff, and 2 new cabinet members, and 4 new regents that have joined the board, and also had a new regent that replaced beloved former regent Lieberman, as well as we've had 3 chairs of the board. This pandemic started under former Chair Geddes, and then Chair DeBrava, and now Chair McAdoo. In May and June of 2020, all institutions were required to pivot in terms of graduation ceremonies. All our presidents had to think outside the box, and students as well, and did those in virtual formats. As we looked into fall of 2020, we stress flexibility, kept up on our Clery Act notifications, enacted all quarantine and social distancing protocols, but we also worked with the 50% classroom capacity restriction as we looked at reopening and did so in an online, in-person hybrid approach. We enacted testing for all returning dorm students last fall. We put out information regarding eviction moratoriums, assisted with food insecurity at the institution level, and also had restrictions on international travel and study. As we moved in August of 2020, the legislature held the special session where we enacted responses to the budget crisis that was ensued due to the pandemic. Senate Bill 4, which is noteworthy, was enacted by the legislature, which imposed, established a civil immunity provision for entities so long as they maintained full compliance with all CDC gubernatorial directives. As we moved into the fall of 2020, the board, in response to the special session, enacted emergency code provisions related to mandatory employee furloughs, as well as a 4.6% mandatory pay reduction. In the January 2021 this year, the vaccination efforts started, and as we just heard from the deans of both of our medical schools, a tremendous effort was begun on the vaccination front by all the healthcare professionals throughout our institutions, not only UNR and UNLV, but CSN in Nevada State, all GBC, all had tremendous numbers of unsung heroes who were truly in the trenches of this. As we moved into to June 1st, the world looked better, for lack of a better word. Our statewide infection rate was at 137. Our restrictions were lifted. Capacity restrictions were lifted, and I would say, you know, the world looked like it was returning a bit to normal. Jump 2 months later, and August 1st, and our statewide infection rate had jumped to 1,052 a day. So in that 60-day period, we went from 137 to 1,052. There was a resurgence of the Delta variant, and we had to pivot, and we're in that process of pivoting right now. And so that's just a broad timeline. I have not touched on every matter or kind of change in direction, but that was just to set a broader baseline. Some information, I'm just going to put out some data here that we have as of this date. It's not perfect data, and but it's the best that we have as of this meeting. And so this is a bit by the number. We have we started self-reporting for all NSHE institutions and faculty last August, and put those on our website at the request of Chancellor Rose when she came on board. So far to date, since that time, we've had reported 3,984 positive COVID infections system-wide with both faculty and employees. Again, that may not be perfect data because there is a self-reporting component, but that is 3,984 out of 115,000 employees and students. So that gets us to about a 3.5% positive infection rate. That's a fraction of what the infection rate right now is at 12% statewide. So I think that, in my opinion, speaks well, remarkably, to the efforts of faculty and students and institutions in navigating this pandemic. Over the past month, we have worked with the COVID task force and with the assistance of my co-chair Cage and others have been working with the state as well as the Attorney General's office, and we secured access to what's called WebIZ, which is a statewide platform and database. That's, as lack of a better word, is a central repository for COVID-19 vaccination status, and we are extraordinarily appreciative to the Division of Behavioral Health for their efforts on that. And based on the numbers that we begin receiving, we started matching the data in the WebIZ program with our employee rosters that we have in the Workday system, and integrating those processes. Our system computing services has begun to create new platforms in Workday to recognize this new information and a COVID-19 status option in Workday. I'm going to read off the numbers, the best available numbers that we have as of this week. Regarding total employee vaccination status. And in doing so, I'd just like to put the caveat that depending on who you talk to, there can be different numbers. And part of that is based upon who you consider in a specific employee group. If you're just looking at academic or administrative faculty, if you include adjunct faculty, adjunct professors, or if you extend it further into student workers, graduate assistants, postdoctoral students. So depending upon what you consider, quote unquote, an employee in that group, you'll get a different percentage. The data that I'm going to read off is an expansive employee interpretation that includes the student groups, the postdoctoral groups, and essentially anyone who's working that's receiving a paycheck. And so what we have as of right now is DRI, North and South, at a 77.4% employee vaccination rate. We have system administration and system computing services in Vegas and Reno at a 76.3% vaccination rate. Nevada State College, we have at a 64.1% vaccination rate. TMCC at 62.5%. UNLV at 61.8%. GBC at 58.5%. CSN at 57.5%. UNR at 52.5%, and WNC at 49.2%. And with stating those percentages, again, want to stress, if, for example, you look at UNR and you only analyze administrative and academic faculty, you'll get a different percentage. Just, you know, looking at UNR's academic and administrative faculty, it jumps up to a 74.7% vaccination rate for the UNR main campus, or a 73.5% vaccination rate for their School of Medicine. So just want to clarify that there is differing rates. And my request to our HR department, which provided me this information, has been the total employees, an expansive employee list, including all student workers. Overall, you know, Inchi would then have a 56.1% employee vaccination rate. The state right now has an approximately 58% in employee vaccination rate. So that gives a pulse of where we are statewide. But I would note in that five of our institutions are above that 58% rate, as well as system administration and system computing services. And another way of saying this is We have 13,443 employees vaccinated and 10,521 unvaccinated. And again, I would stress that this data is fluid. In the WebIZ integration, the information didn't always transfer. And so we are in the process of reaching out to employees, and the HR directors at each institution are doing this, and notifying them of our current information about their vaccination status and asking them if this is correct and if they have documentation to show that this is incorrect, to bring it to their HR department, and we will work with them to make sure it's updated. That process is actively going on right now. My estimation is that these numbers will increase in terms of the percentages as over the next several weeks. In an overall state of play right now, and I believe most people know, we are in a face covering requirement, both indoors and outdoors at all times, applicable to everyone, whether vaccinated or unvaccinated. Whether speaking in front of a podium or a classroom or not. We are also in a place where our institutions that have dorms are actively testing all resident students or requiring proof of vaccination status. The State Board of Health on August 20th amended our current student vaccination regulations to impose a vaccine requirement for all students at all INSHE institutions. That was an expansion of the law that was in place that had a vaccine requirement for university students. That was expanded to all of our colleges, in community colleges as well as Nevada state colleges. In that amended regulation, certainly there's a religious and medical exception that's recognized in the law. And they have imposed a implementation date of November 1st. And would just like to clarify on the record, November 1st is a date where most institutions will begin enrollment for the spring 2022 semester. And been working with the registrars, with assistance of Vice Chancellor Abba, on having mechanisms in place to essentially place a hold on the ability of a student who doesn't have a verifiable vaccination series complete by the November 1st enrollment date. That doesn't mean that they're going to be kicked out of class or disenrolled from class for the fall semester. The intent, as we understand it, is to ensure that all students in the start of the spring 2022 semester who are attending in-person classes are fully vaccinated. And when we say fully vaccinated, a complete vaccination series of either both doses of Pfizer or Moderna or the one shot of the Johnson & Johnson. We are working to implement that. Myself, as well as Mr. Cage, are working on an additional agreement with the state to get our student vaccination information from the WebIZ platform and provide that to each INSHE institution so that they can assist with the recording and tracking of student vaccination status. Our two major universities, UNR and UNLV, have been doing this, that they already have vaccination protocols in place for incoming students. COVID-19 is added to that list. But our community colleges, this is new, and so they're working on getting that infrastructure and those resources in place to comply with this new law. And I guess to sum up, and you know, we've maintained our infection rate below the state average. We've maintained in full compliance with all CDC guidelines. with all gubernatorial directives regarding COVID-19. We've had no OSHA citations at any institution that I'm aware of system-wide. We've had no wide clusters or outbreaks at any institution or building that we're aware of system-wide. We've had no Cleary violations. We are returning and have returned to fall with both in-person courses as well as online options. And most institutions are at or exceeding the statewide vaccination average right now with respect to employees. As many may be aware, there was a new order issued by President Biden yesterday during the board meeting, and we are currently reviewing that as well. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Cage to see if he has anything further to add.
Thanks, General Counsel Reynolds. And for Vice Chancellor Cage, we look forward to hearing your comments. I just want to remind everyone, we're now going into extra time, and Chair McAdoo has been gracious enough to allow us some extra time, so this is very important. But brevity is appreciated, so we'll get to you and the rest of the speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. This is Caleb Cage for the record, and I don't have anything additional to add to the great report provided by Joe. I'd be happy to move to whatever questions or whoever's next with your speaker, sir.
Excellent. Thank you for being available for questions. We will go to Dr. Cheryl Hug English, if she's present there.
Good morning, Chair DeBrava, members of the board, Chancellor Rose. For the record, I'm Cheryl Hug English, Director of the Student Health Center at the University of Nevada, Reno. It's nice to see all of you in person today. I am here to share some updates about COVID-19 in Washoe County and our UNR campus. I don't think any of us anticipated that 18 months after our first COVID case was diagnosed in the state of Nevada, that we would still be talking about it and struggling with this virus. COVID-19 continues to challenge, to frustrate, and at times anger us. All of our NC institutions have had to constantly problem solve, strategize, plan, reassess, and pivot in a landscape that seems ever-changing. Much has changed since my last update on June 11th. As has been stated, in our state and nationally, the COVID case numbers had improved dramatically in June, and we were all collectively, thank you, breathing a sigh of relief. Yet then the Delta variant took hold. Nationally, as well as in our state, we have once again experienced a surge in case numbers, hospitalizations, and unfortunately, deaths. Currently, nationwide, there are more than 101,000 people hospitalized with COVID-19. Daily cases are up more than 300% from where they were following Labor Day last year, with the number of daily deaths twice as high as they were this time last year in 2020. Clearly, these are sobering statistics. In Washoe County, we are in the very high-risk category. Our positivity rate is currently at 19.4%, and daily case numbers are at 364. Testing availability is currently a challenge with a high demand at all testing locations. Our hospital case numbers have increased with 187 current hospitalizations for COVID-19. On a positive note, the vaccination rate does increase with, we currently have 61.8% of Washoe County residents vaccinated. On our UNR campus, we have eagerly and enthusiastically welcomed students back to a fully in-person learning experience. As in our county, not surprisingly, we have seen an increase in positive cases once the semester began. But our campus makes every effort to reinforce mitigation strategies, including indoor masking policies and encouraging vaccination. In addition to the daily COVID vaccinations supplied at the Student Health Center, multiple vaccine pods are currently ongoing at various locations on campus, such as the Student Union and our residence halls. We've initiated a Vax the Pack campaign and have offered incentives with a prize drawing that will occur at the end of September. Thus far, we have over 3,300 students that have participated in the Vax the Pack campaign. Our student ambassadors and student leaders have really gotten involved with the promoting the vaccination efforts. When positive cases are identified, contact tracing occurs, faculty are notified of cases in their classrooms, and students who are living in our residence halls are placed in designated isolation or quarantine rooms. Support and academic accommodations are made for students who have tested positive. The health and safety of our campus is our primary focus. The Student Health Center does continue to offer daily COVID-19 testing as well as COVID-19 vaccinations. We have tested 8,320 students and 788 faculty and staff. And since the semester has begun, we have provided 337 COVID vaccinations. In addition, we are continuing to provide full in-service patient appointments to help meet the physical and mental health care needs of our students. Our clinic continues to be very busy. On Friday, we had over 244 patient encounters. While there is much sobering news, and I know all of us are experiencing corona fatigue, there is also great hope. We have the means to help us out of this COVID-19 vortex. Vaccination is the most significant and successful tool we have to combat this virus. We must utilize this tool. As we've seen over the last 3 months, the longer we give this virus a chance to spread, the more opportunity we give it to mutate into even more infectious or deadly forms. In order to protect our campus communities, we need to have our students, faculty, and staff vaccinated. Each unvaccinated individual allows this virus to continue to spread and to infect others. If we look back historically to other infectious diseases such as polio, measles, smallpox, et cetera, it has been vaccination that has allowed us to successfully eliminate or eradicate these diseases. It took a collective effort. It took social responsibility and commitment. Let us have the courage to do the same with COVID-19. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Hugg English. I'll maybe save the questions till the very end, if that's okay.
Perfect.
We will proceed to Sonia Siebert, I believe, is presenting on behalf of GBC in Elko County.
Good morning, and thank you. For the record, Sonia Siebert, Vice President for Business Affairs. Dean Amber Donnelly and I have been working closely together over the last year and a half. Today, Amber is unable to join us, so I would like to share some brief updates with you. Under the leadership of Amber Donnelly, GBC continues to run the contact tracing for Elko, Lander, Humboldt, and Lander counties. This effort continues to be supported through grant funding from the state of Nevada. We have about 20 contact tracers for these areas. This is not an easy job and continues to be critical as we move through the pandemic. We thank all the contact tracers and the work they do. The past several weeks have seen a steady incline in the rural counties with COVID-positive patients. This comes after a relatively stable summer that started a steady increase the first week of August. In the previous year, one of the major concerns for our rural areas was over the risk of the hospitals being at excess capacity or having the lack of staff and resources. While we certainly saw our resources stretched this past year, hospitals in the rural counties were able to cope with the increase in patients. What we are seeing now is that COVID-19 hospitalizations represent upwards in some cases of 25 to 50% or more of the patient hospitalizations in northeastern rural areas. The overwhelming majority of these patients are unvaccinated, driving some hospitals like Northeastern Nevada Regional Hospital to make community announcements to everyone to get vaccinated. Simultaneously with the rising COVID-19 hospitalizations, the level of care that some patients need requires transport to larger urban hospitals. Unfortunately, our border states in Idaho and Utah are experiencing the same surges of patients and have not been accepting patients. The fear of not being able to transport to a higher level of care is where we are at. Our rural hospitals are being taxed, not just in nurses, but in respiratory therapists. The spread of the Delta variant has created an increase in cases in fully vaccinated medical staff, which is again straining resources. As mentioned earlier, the availability of testing resources has also been impacted and are in shorter supply. In many of the communities that we serve, testing is only being done for those who have symptoms or in required surgery. What we are now seeing specific to Elko County is a total vaccination rate of our population of 27.5% and barely climbing. Currently, 20% of those cases that have tested positive are age 30 to 39, 18% of the cases are age 20 to 29, 16% of the cases are 40 to 49, and 11% are age 10 to 19. Based upon these statistics, you can see that the impact of the 20 to 39-year-olds are having on our rural communities. This correlates with the COVID positive cases that we have recently seen at GBC. For the fall semester, we do have more in-person classes, but not to the level of pre-pandemic. In addition, we are closely monitoring and will revise protocols and instruction modality if needed during the semester. In closing, we can truly say that based upon the past year and the involvement we have had with the contact tracing and those patients, the most effective way out of the pandemic is through vaccination. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. And I can just say Elko County and the area has some challenges and work cut out for them. We'll go to Director Garcia.
Good morning, Chair DeBrava, committee members, Chancellor Rose, and presidents. For the record, my name is Adam Garcia, Vice President of Public Safety Services and Director of University Police Services Southern Command. The current trends in Clark County indicate that the 25 to 49 age group is reporting the highest number of COVID infections, followed closely by the 5 to 17 year old age group. The most recent data that we've received reveals a daily average of 485 cases reported per day in Clark County, down from a peak of more than 1,000 in late July, but much higher than the 137 per day that were reported in June. New COVID cases are trending highest in Clark County in the north and northeast zip codes, while trending lowest in the south and in the west. And she continues to be a key partner for Clark County and the Southern Nevada Health District, with the College of Southern Nevada, Nevada State, and UNLV rolling up their sleeves to support COVID-19 testing and vaccination across the region. Of the 10 or so testing and or vaccination sites in Clark County, four are operated by ENSHE. For instance, CSN has established temporary structures at their three main campuses that are dedicated to COVID testing and vaccination in support of the Southern Nevada Health District. To date, the CSN facilities have accounted for more than 15,000 COVID tests and 4,300 additional COVID vaccinations. Nevada State College has partnered with Immunize Nevada to operate pop-up vaccination clinics on their campuses in support of the student vaccine mandate. This presents opportunities for students and others to receive the COVID-19 vaccine while they are on campus. UNLV reopened the testing and vaccination site in cooperation with Clark County Emergency Management and the Nevada National Guard at the Stan Fulton Building due to the high demand for these services. Since August 4th, this site has offered more than 10,000 COVID tests and an additional 1,000 vaccinations. As for classroom instruction, UNLV has shifted additional courses to remote and online delivery and changed many of the welcome events to virtual formats due to the high infection rates that we've been seeing in Clark County during July and August. The university has transitioned from approximately 80% in-person classes to approximately 60%, and from initial estimate of 20% online or remote to about 40. CSN in-person classroom instruction is scheduled at 36%, 56% remote or online, and hybrid at about 8%, while in Nevada State, 75% are being held online and 25% in person. Overall operations conditions, in Clark County are improving very slowly after a recent spike in COVID cases that peaked in July. The reported number of COVID cases continued to trend downward as we ended the month of August. However, we anticipate we may see an overall increase following the Labor Day holiday and the onset of the winter season. I continue to represent NSHE at the Regional Policy Group meetings chaired by Commissioner Kirkpatrick, and Assistant Director for Emergency Management Greg May also represents our southern institutions at the Multi-Agency Coordination Center, which will begin meeting next week to discuss and review long-term COVID strategy and begin the after-action hot wash process. With our regional stakeholders, we will continue to monitor this disease and reallocate the resources as appropriate. The success we have had is the result of the support of Chancellor Rose, Chief General Counsel Joe Reynolds, President Whitfield, President Zaragoza, President Pollard, and President Chara. Because of their support, Southern Nevada campuses account for 23% of the available COVID testing and vaccination services that are provided in Clark County and to the region. These public-facing sites have provided NSHE the opportunity to provide more than 300,000 COVID tests and over 150,000 vaccinations to Southern Nevada since the outset of the pandemic. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Garcia. And sure. Thanks, everybody. And I was going to just thank everyone quickly, Chief Counsel Reynolds, for everything that they're doing on all the campuses with all the administration and the presidents, the medical and nursing and ancillary health care providers. What everyone's doing is just amazing, and we're doing obviously the best we can during this pandemic time. I didn't know, General Counsel Reynolds, if you had some concluding remarks, or the Chancellor wanted to make any concluding remarks?
Prior to the Chancellor, I just wanted to clarify on the record to add to my prior statement about the fluidity of this. The numbers that I read were the best as of Tuesday of this week, but as of today, the numbers for UNR have even increased, and real time right now, they're at 64.2% for all employees. And just wanted to clarify the record on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other specific questions, or Chancellor Rose?
Thank you, Chairman DeBrava. I appreciate the opportunity for the record, Chancellor Rose. I just want to very briefly thank all of the experts who have spoken here this morning. I think you're seeing just the absolute incredible professionalism and commitment and care across the NSHE system. It is a tremendous effort, and I want to thank the team. There are many more who are contributing every day, day in and day out, but the speakers you've heard from this morning are really leading the charge, and I just want to thank them for their incredible service under really difficult conditions. And to say finally, you know, I have to tell you on a national level, I'm very proud of the report that we are able to give here in terms of our performance under these conditions. Many of my peers across the country have been suffering with major outbreaks on their campuses, and that has not been true in the state of Nevada, and it's due to the hard work of the individuals you've heard from this morning. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose, and thank you to your cabinet. I do have Regent Brooks for a comment or question.
Thank you, Chair. So I had had some conversation with Joe Reynolds prior to the meeting today, because there were some questions and a few statements that I wanted to make. And according to the agenda, frankly, Chair DeBravo, this was the only place that it seemed fitting to make them, according to Mr. Reynolds. So the questions that I have to do with Mr. Reynolds, and the numbers that you gave, where the current institutions sit with the employees and staff who have become vaccinated. I was wondering, is there a certain segment of those folks that you're taking a look at if we are considering the 70% statewide goal for each institution regarding vaccines that would help with getting to those numbers or what that looked like?
Joe Reynolds, for the record. Thank you, Regent Brooks. The data that I shared, again, was an expansive interpretation of employee. And so we asked, anyone who's essentially receiving a paycheck, whether, again, it's student workers, graduate assistants, postdoctoral students, as well as our classified staff, academic and administrative faculty. So it's a broader group. And then if you wanted to run numbers, for example, folks who are not students, we have about 17,000 employees. When we add the students, we get to about 23,000. And so that's where the data came from, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question correctly. But in terms of the 70% threshold, as directed from Governor Sisolak in the state testing policy, there is the ability to be exempt from that testing policy where a location reaches a 70% threshold. Right now, the best information that we have is DRI, and here in Vegas as well as in Reno has exceeded that 70% threshold, as well as our INCHI system administration offices, both here in Vegas and in Reno. Other institutions, as you heard, are getting close and inching up towards that. And as the next weeks unfold, again, we expect that the percentages that I stated today will only grow higher.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Reynolds. I appreciate that. Yeah. Obviously, and I've said it before, it just this topic is probably one of the most politically and socially divisive topics that I've ever had to speak on or speak about or speak with others about. As my role as a regent, there is some accountability that I do have to constituents, and so being very transparent and easy to get a hold of, I'm certainly flooded with questions, emails, and most of them regarding policies and initiative that have to do with COVID and higher institutions. I wish I could say we're fantastic, but they're not. And having said that, there was some information that the Las Vegas Police Protective Association had sent me based on a survey that they did asking their members how the latest mandate from the Nevada Board of Health would affect them. And I just want to share some numbers. 33.42% said that there would be no impact on them or their children regarding education. 56% said that they would explore out-of-state options. And 10% said that they would attend online courses only throughout the state of Nevada. And so it's just a picture of what some of this looks like when we talk about how some of these policies affect our community. And so I think it's a consideration as we move forward in terms of what some of the policy rollout looks like. On the questions I do have, and I'm not sure who would be best to answer them, have to do with the exemption forms, both the medical and the religious form. And on those forms, when I looked at them, I did not see a specific box for a student or someone to check regarding the COVID vaccination. Is there a box or a new form that's going to be rolled out, or do they just mark that themselves?
Thank you, Regent Brooks. Joe Reynolds, for the record. I think I'm probably the best person to answer that. We have, after the Board of Health's decision on August 20th, have reached back out and are literally actively working with the Board of Health as well as the Attorney General's office on updating those forms. The prior forms were geared both towards the prior vaccination requirements as well as the universities. And so we've asked them to update it to include COVID-19 as well as clarify that this is applicable to all of our institutions. And once we get that in, we'd hope to either today or early next week, we will communicate that form to all of our institutions as well as intend to put it on our INCHI website because my legal advice, I believe it's best that all institutions use the exact same form for all students.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. The other thing I wanted to add on top of that was some of the emails that I got were actually complaints regarding being able to locate those forms. And in some cases, students felt like they were being harassed in a manner that when they asked for a form or the process in which they would go through for an exemption, what they explained was that whomever they were speaking to wasn't helpful in guiding them as much as they were questioning why they would want the form to begin with. So I'm not really sure if there's something that can be done in terms of communicating what this looks like for students. And
thank you, Joe Reynolds, for the record. Something that Chancellor Rose and as well as Vice Chancellor Brooks we've been discussing at their suggestion, which I think is a fantastic idea, is again putting them directly even on the INCHI website and making them available. A religious exemption for the students as well as a medical exemption is expressly recognized in the law, in NAC 441A, and that is the law. The Supreme Court jurisprudence is on the religious piece is a sincerely held and genuine belief in terms of a religious exemption. Those, however, will be reviewed as well as a medical exemption, but students are certainly entitled to apply for those and request those.
If a student receives an exemption, then they would be part of some type of weekly testing, or what does that look like?
Generally, when that happens, a dialogue or a negotiation will occur about whether it's a religious exemption or say a medical exemption, and whether there's an accommodation that is acceptable and appropriate that will work. Those decisions, though, that haven't been made yet, and we'd also look to guidance from our medical experts on what is or isn't a viable accommodation, whether it includes testing, additional face covering requirements, or if the medical advice is that it needs to be online or remote instruction. I just don't want to hypothesize right now on that.
Sure.
Without looking at a specific case.
I appreciate that. In terms of the vaccine itself, if there is a student that receives a vaccine based on a mandate that is set, is there who is liable in the event that there would be an adverse reaction from that vaccine? What would that look like?
I would say it's the law. And so, the regulatory amendment by the State Board of Health is law and has the force of an effect of law. There is a choice that is a part of this conversation. In order to participate in an activity, you can choose to comply with the law or not. And so there's an individual responsibility to that.
Sure, Ms. Rose, but what I'm asking specifically, though, is then would the Nevada Board of Health be held liable and responsible if a student, in fact, takes the vaccine and then has an adverse reaction to the vaccine?
In my opinion, no. Again, there's an individual choice at play here. Nobody is forcing anybody to go to school. And there's a requirement, and we have a host of laws that are in place that everyone is in a civil society has to comply with. And in complying with the law, you don't necessarily get a claim against the government for establishing it.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Chair DeBrava, I don't have any more questions or statements. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. I have Vice Chair Carter.
Just a quick question on the form, because I had not thought about that before, but as you said, the health department previously had universities have requirements for vaccines, and we're adding COVID to that list. For community colleges and the state college, they didn't have the requirement for the other vaccines. It's just COVID. So will there be two forms, or are you still saying that there would just be one form and there would be just – maybe you can give me a little more – I haven't seen the form, so if you could give me a little more detail.
No, thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Carter, Joe Reynolds. We're trying to clarify that. That's exactly what we're working with the health board and the attorney general's office, because they are the state forms that were initially drafted by the state board of health regarding the other vaccine requirements. But we certainly want it to be clear that this new amendment doesn't include a mandate for community college students to see, you know, measles, mumps, rubella vaccines, that it is specific from the State Board of Health to COVID-19.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I have a question. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair DeBrava. This is for Council Joe Reynolds. It's in law to, if you're, the two exemptions, if it's medical and, religious. Thank you, Kathy. Medical and religious, then whose responsibility is it to pay for that weekly testing? Because I think that was in the law. So is it the individual who's gotten that exemption, or are institutions going to be required to provide that? Thank you.
Joe Reynolds, for the record, with respect to the testing policy for employees that are being enacted for all state agencies, it is ultimately the responsibility of the individual employee to pay the cost of any testing. With saying that, an important caveat is that we have been working hard to work with our partners as well as institutions in securing free testing sites and available testing capacity. It's more difficult right now in Washoe County than it is in Clark County, but the ultimate burden at the end of the day falls on the employee, but we are trying in every way to connect resources so that they don't have to pay out of pocket.
Thank you, everyone. I'm concluding that item, and I'm sure that's not the last we'll hear about this issue for sure, unfortunately. I'm going to item 8, new business. Is there any new business? Hearing none, I would go to public comment. Is there any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno, Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. We do have one.
Oh, okay. Please, go ahead.
Kent Urban, Nevada Factory Alliance. I do have some prepared remarks for the main meeting, but I wanted just to take this opportunity to say thank you to everyone at NSHE. The presentation this morning was very informative. Communication is highly important, and some of the fears and anxieties of faculty that will be expressed is partly not knowing everything behind the scenes that is going on. And so I just wanted to make that point that the communication is just so important. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And
do we have any, thank you, any public comment in Elko?
There is none in Elko.
Thank you. Winter, any submitted public comment here?
No submitted public comment.
Do we have any in-person public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment in Las Vegas.
I will then adjourn this meeting and ask if Chair McAdoo is present, if she has an announcement regarding the Security Committee and the time.